Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Who owns the house? When you buy property on your own, it's quite simple. The title's in your name, the mortgage is in your name, and it's your asset. But when you buy a property with someone else, you have two main choices of how you own the property: joint tenants and tenants in common. Today, I have Peter Bobbin, principal lawyer at Coleman Greig Lawyers, to discuss what these terms mean and the pros and cons of each. Thank you for joining me once again today, Peter.
Thank you, Julia.
Peter, let's start with joint tenants. What does it mean?
Well, joint tenants, it's a style of ownership. We lawyers will describe it as it's where people own something co-jointly in a manner where there's what we call a right of survivorship. So what that means is that if one of the owners, the joint tenant owners that is, dies, then the other automatically, not via the will, but automatically, where it's held by as joint tenants, the other co-owner automatically will inherit and gain the whole title. And that's no more clearer than if some people own a piece of real estate, a home unit, as joint tenants, all I need to lodge with the land registry is basically one form and a copy of the death certificate, and that other joint tenant will be removed, and as a joint tenant owner, I then become the whole owner of the property. No probate required.
And do you have to own equal shares in the property to have this kind of arrangement?
Yes, that's right. Because so rather technically, the way it works is that if we own something as joint tenant, then we both equally own the whole. Oh, and let's be clear on something for the moment. Joint tenancy is not limited to merely two people. It's most common. The vast bulk of people, when we see a joint tenancy ownership, it's two, but there's no reason why we can't have three or more. So if it's two, then each person actually owns everything, 100%, shared with another. If it's three people, all joint tenancy, then each of them own everything, 100%, again, jointly with the other two.
Okay. So what does it mean if you want to sell? Do both parties have to agree because you're joint tenants?
That's exactly right. The character of being a joint tenant means that both are the owners, and both or all joint tenants need to make those decisions, which includes a decision to sell.
And is this the common structure for most couples?
Look, you know, yes, it is the most common structure for very many couples, particularly first marriage couples. And, you know, I often find that the first marriage couple won't actually know, do they own something as joint tenant or something we'll be talking about shortly, tenant in common. So I sometimes find that just maybe it's their lawyer or conveyancer who's made the decision for them, which is a bit of a shame, because it's really quite important to know not only what you own, but how you hold it and how you own it, because joint tenancy is the process by its very nature controls who inherits it. So for common first marriage couples, it's actually joint tenancy. But for second marriage couples and maybe third and fourth marriage couples, what we'll find is it's actually tenants in common, which is most common.
So how do you find out which one that you've chosen down the track when you can't remember anymore?
So there's a couple of points to observe here. The first of all is that as it relates to real estate, all the land registries across Australia, and this is state-based law, so we have land registries for every Australian jurisdiction, they require that where there's more than one person's name on a title, they actually require that it's actually expressed, whether it's joint tenant or tenant in common. So you actually can't register title ownership of real estate unless it's clearly stated as to whether it's joint tenant and tenant in common. But do you know the same concepts apply for other property interests or other interests, I should say? And there's a particular presumption here that actually can be quite important. And this presumption varies across Australia. So I can have two owners of a motor vehicle. I can have two people registered on a share portfolio where we both own all of the particular listed securities portfolio. And it can be important in those areas to actually identify whether it's joint tenant or tenant in common. And they're not really set up like land registries to require that being made clear. So one of the smartest things people can do is, if I want to hold something jointly with another, make a positive decision as to how you wish that to be. And, well, then you simply write after the names as joint tenants. So if I wanted to have a whole share portfolio owned equally with my wife as joint tenants, then what I do is I write that the share ownership is Peter and Penny Bobbin, and then in brackets, as joint tenants. Or if I want the other approach, then in brackets, as tenants in common. So for real estate, you can't register it in more than one name without expressly stating it. For other assets and interests, think through what's desired and then just in little parentheses, little brackets, after that name, after the two or more names are written, just add what you want it to be. Add that phrase as joint tenants or add that phrase as tenants in common.
So what exactly is tenants in common?
So, it's another way in which people can co-own something, but they own their portion separately and independently. So if I own something as joint tenants, remember what I said is that we both equally own everything. And most importantly, on the death of one of us, the survivor automatically gets it. Now contrast that to tenants in common, because where we are stated as being owners, tenants in common, what we're really saying is that we each own our separate part. We don't have an interest in the whole with another. We each own our separate part. And that separate part does not have this rule of survivorship. That separate part stays with me. If I were to die, that separate part, my tenant in common part, actually is controlled by the terms of my will. I have the power to decide what happens to my tenant in common interest. And remember, you can have more than two people. So whilst most commonly joint tenant or tenant in common often references two people, you can have more than two people.
So with tenants in common, is it possible that if we owned a property together, I might own 20% of it and you might own the other 80% and that gets recorded somewhere?
That's exactly right. So we're making a joint investment decision, but I'm putting in only 20% and you're actually putting up 80%, then tenant in common approach to clearly express our separate interests by reference to our separate contributions is really the only and the best way to go.
And so who might enter into that kind of ownership structure?
So you'll find that joint tenancies is very common with first marriage couples. And then tenant in common is actually for everybody else. Siblings, co-investing, second relationships, where we're wanting to keep our particular contributions to that second relationship to ourselves to pass via our wills. People making co-investments, siblings making co-investments. And that's where tenant in common really comes into play. Parent and child, it can be a common approach, taking the tenant in common and expressing the express interest that each has.
And so what are the advantages and the disadvantages of the tenants in common?
The most important advantage is being able to clearly express what my share in ownership is. That's the most and significant advantage. The disadvantage of holding something as tenant in common really turns on answering the question or posing the question, where do I want my share to go? Because if you and I hold something as tenant in common, but really my decision is I want you to take the whole of it on my death, then by holding it as tenants in common, I'm actually not holding it in the way in which I should. We really should change that and make it joint tenants. So the disadvantage really arises where the tenant in common approach is not the right one, and we just haven't thought it through or haven't gone about the process of changing it.
So I guess an example might be if we have a situation where my elderly mother wants to come and live with me and we have to do something to the house. We put our money together and we have a joint ownership of the house. If that's done as a tenants in common and she passes away, presumably before me because she's older, the money would come not to me but be part of her estate.
That's right. That's exactly right. The share that she's contributed into that jointly owned property will then become part of her estate. And, that's where the result will either be what's expected or, more often, what's not expected.
So as an only child, that wouldn't be probably the best way to hold it.
No, because if her intention is that she wanted her share in the home to go to you, but it's held as tenants in common, she's effectively then forced you to go through a full process of gaining probate and making an application to the Supreme Court and getting orders for the grant of probate, whereas if it was held as joint tenants, one form, copy of the death certificate, register that at the land titles office and the ownership can be changed. So just on that point, Julia, I keep saying about choosing, making an active decision as to whether it should be tenants in common or joint tenants. Did you know that it's easy to change from one to the other and indeed back again? It's actually not difficult to what we lawyers call sever the tenancy and change something that's held as joint tenants into tenants in common. And by the way, doing that does not crystallize a capital gains tax or even a stamp duty event. And if something has been held as tenants in common and the interest is, in the example you've just given, that we really now want to make it held as joint tenants, then it's actually not a difficult process to change it from tenants in common to joint tenants. Again, it's not a capital gains tax event, not even a stamp duty event.
Now, that's very interesting because I guess in that example, if I die first, I might have a will that doesn't want all my estate to go to my mother. I might have a will that wants it to go somewhere else. So in my case, I probably would appreciate, you know, to have the tenants in common with her.
That's exactly right. I mean, and there can be a whole range of reasons as to why you might want that. You might, but of course you might want your mother to continue to have a right of occupancy. So that's where, because you've got a tenant in common interest, you're able to design what to do with your part of the property. So, and it's easy enough for you to then say, well, I give my mother a right to continue to live in my tenant in common part of the property. But on her death, your tenant in common part of the property is then to go in a particular direction that you wish it to be, which may be to some very dear and close friends who've been an important part of your life. That's where having it as tenants in common is exactly the right approach, and you just make that marry and fit in with that personal estate planning.
So when I'm buying the property, I make one decision, but it's easy to change that down the track?
Yes, that's right. So you need to make, when it's real estate again, remember what I said is you cannot register joint ownership of real estate without expressing it to be joint tenant or tenant in common. So give some good thought as to what it should be. And don't feel locked in, because if in time the other approach is seen to be the better approach, it's not a difficult thing to change it.
But both people will have to be in agreement to change it at any time.
No, actually, severing a joint tenancy can be done by one person. And you can well understand that in a broken personal or emotional relationship where parties are not cooperating anymore, you can actually see why there might be good reason as to it only requires one to change what was joint tenancy to tenant in common. Going the reverse, that is, tenant in common to joint tenancy, does require both to cooperate.
Right.
You know, one of the most common areas where it happens is where one of the parties is now quite a disabled person, dementia.
Mm.
So if I and my wife own something as joint tenants and she's now in a special care dementia home, I might very well not want her to take automatically on my death the whole of the property because she's got dementia. That's an example of where I can then serve this notice of severing the tenancy. And even though she's got dementia, that severing of the tenancy will still apply. And it then will change from joint tenant to tenant in common. And then my will operate as to my half. And that can actually be really quite important for social security reasons. Because in the absence of doing that, my wife is going to not only will she have her half of the home, she'll actually inherit my half. You know, all of a sudden, if she's in Sydney or the property's in Sydney, where the average values are now about 1.2, she's now got assets of 1.2, which is now dramatically impacting her social security support and the cost of being in the special care nursing home. So I could very much then sever the tenancy by lodging a single form. I then do a will that then says, I want my half of the home to go into a special purpose trust so that it doesn't become part of her assets for asset social security asset test purposes, but it nevertheless is still available. And that's a very common situation.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter. It's been a joy talking to you again.
You're very welcome. I look forward to further opportunities. Thank you, Julia.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.